So I was just babysitting Joel's kids, and I noticed something. Especially as it got nearer their bedtimes, you know, and they're just tired and cranky and just can't regulate their emotions at all. What the fuck is that? I guess they're doing construction or something. On the railway tracks? So many fun, different kinds of noises in the city. You really can learn a lot from watching kids, like even just watching how easily upset they get when they're tired, or on the other side, like when they're like excited, how they move around a lot and they're not self-conscious about their bodies. Like Elliot Hulse said that he was kind of clued into a lot of his like mind-body theories by watching his kids and just seeing how they react and how they behave and how, you know, how human organisms are before they get kind of all neurotic and wound up from society and putting up these barriers of like, oh, I shouldn't act like this, I shouldn't act like that. Like when they just follow how they feel, how do they act? Like if you watch any of his like warm-up stuff on YouTube, his like stretching routines, like it's funny looking because he looks kind of like a little kid the way he's like shaking himself out. So yeah, on the other side of that, definitely seeing how just how much they change when they're tired, like they're like different people, is interesting. But even just seeing the things that made them upset, like, you know, it's one thing if you bump your toe or fall off a chair or something, but that doesn't actually make them upset for very long. You know, that's something they can shake off easy. The things that made them real upset were like setting up little goals or expectations about how things should be or what they deserve, and then having those denied, and they just kept getting more and more cartoonish. Like one kid emptied out a laundry hamper and was like, hey, put me in the laundry hamper. And their dad was like, no, put the laundry back in the laundry hamper. Like, you're not supposed to fucking crawl in the laundry hamper. That's not what it's for. And then that leads to extreme upset because, like, no, this is the thing. I want to be in the laundry hamper, and if I can't be, I'm upset. And then it devolved to one kid had a piece of toast with jam on it. And it was like, oh, I don't want to split this toast with my brother. So it's like, all right, we'll make you your own piece of toast. And the kid was eating the toast for a bit and then left the piece of toast, left the whole table, was on the other side of the room playing with Lego stuff, but then sees that the brother is playing with the new piece of toast and is all upset. That's my toast! Ah! Oh my God! I deserve that toast! That was my toast, and it doesn't matter that I'm done with it and that I don't even want it anymore. The world owes me that toast, and I will be so mad if I don't get the toast. And then, like, this happened so many times over the night. I was like, dude, like, I think there is something to this. Like, these kids are 2 and 3. Like, I think there might just be something in human nature like that. Of, like, at least for certain personality types, that maybe I'm the same as these kids, of, like, making yourself upset because of an expectation that you invented. And I feel like that is totally something that happens that is worth trying to keep in mind of, like instead of focusing on all the things in life that are fine and all the ways things are good, getting obsessed with, like, these things that aren't how they're supposed to be. Oh, I don't have this, I don't have that. This didn't turn out just like I wanted it, and that didn't turn out just like I wanted it. But why should things be any specific way? Who made this rule? Like, I made the rule. I made it up. I made up the rule that I'm supposed to hang out in the laundry hamper, and I made up the rule that no one else can have this piece of toast. You know? Like the only reason those scenarios are upsetting is because of this invented, like, false expectation. And I think I could definitely apply that to my life. I mean, I guess the most obvious example is, oh, I had this girl for a second. Oh man, for like a week I had this girl, and now, oh no, now I don't anymore. What? Ah. And I'm not saying that kind of change isn't, you know, a kind of tough thing to adapt to, but for it to continue to nag after all this time, weeks and weeks and weeks later, it's got to be just because my mindset is wrong. I made up this idea that this is how things are supposed to be. This is how something is supposed to be. And because it isn't, I just can't get over it. Oh, I'm so upset. And I really just felt like, oh, when I saw that kid crying about his stupid toast, someone else has the toast. Yeah. It seemed relevant, man. It seemed like that connected. And it's tough to talk today. There's so many people out downtown. I guess because the weather's good tonight. But just real quick, too, while I'm recording my fucking ramblings. Since I guess this whole episode has been a bit about backsliding and just how I've kind of been regressing this week and how things have kind of sucked. So today I woke up without quite enough sleep. Didn't really have time to exercise and do all this stuff. Had to get traveling to get to my babysitting duties. And because it's been so cold lately, I've had all these layers on. I went and bought a thermal shirt. Sometimes when I exercise, like, I got a hoodie on. Where before, when it was warmer, I mean, like, I even got these shirts that don't really suit my skinniness, but, like, just, like, workout shirts, you know, like, sleeveless tank top shirts. But it was just cool. It's like, you feel cooler because it's like, yeah, I'm in my workout clothes, and I can see these, like, muscles and shit that I've been growing. Because, again, it's not like I'm so muscular. It's just that I'm so skinny, like, the muscles show so clearly and so quickly. But because it's been most of the week I've been really slacking off, I guess again because I'm still new to all this stuff, right? So I don't really know the ups and downs of it and how it all works. So I just have this idea in my head, like, oh, well, there go all my muscles. You know, there goes the 2 months I've been working out. It's done. It's gone. And I was getting ready to take a shower, and I was listening to an interview with Bray Wyatt, who's a... He's this wrestler who is just... He's fucking so great. If you look up Bray Wyatt on YouTube, you'll find some of his rant and crazy speeches and shit, and, like, he's really cool. He pretty much single-handedly pulled me back into wrestling. Like, I would just tune in once in a while to see what was going on. And with him, I was like, whoa, who the fuck is that guy? And then I watched again and again, and next thing you know, I've been watching it for fucking half a year again. And he's basically this, like, crazy apocalypse preacher type character. But before this, he was on TV before as a wrestler, as a guy just named Husky Harris. Just the most boring, normal thing. He's a bit kind of, he's kind of husky. So here he is, Husky Harris. Like, I don't know why they still have wrestling characters like that. Like, how's that going to get over? What are you going to do with that? But he was talking about how when they sent him back down to the training facility, how, like, devastated he was. That he's like, I made it. I made it onto WWE TV. I'm a wrestler now. I'm a pro wrestler. This is it. I'm going to do it. And he thought he did his best, and he worked as hard as he could. And it didn't catch on, and they just sent him back. And he was like, what the fuck, dude? What the fuck? But now that he's back as Bray Wyatt, and I mean, he had a fucking match with John Cena at WrestleMania, for God's sake. John Cena's the fucking Hulk Hogan of the 2010s, the 2000s. Things are going extremely well for Bray Wyatt now, so he was saying, like, at the time, he was just so crushed and just like, what do I fucking do? What can I do different? Like, what more can I give? But then you get a few years down the line and you realize, like, that is the best goddamn thing that could have happened. Because just plodding along as Husky Harris was never going to get anywhere. It was never going to work. That pain and all that hardship he had to go through. Now he's a fucking main event dude. And even within that, he talked about times, like, smaller examples of the same thing. He, like, tore a muscle in his arm, and that delayed his debut. But because of that, they changed his debut to involve these two other guys that were, like, his family, the Wyatt family, and it was way better and just connected way more with the crowd than he thinks it would have if he was just by himself. And it was basically just that message of, like, all the hard things that happen, all the bad things that happen. You got to look at the big picture. You got to look at what you can learn from this and where it could take you in the future, because it may turn out way, way, way better. You got to look at the old path you were on that did not come to fruition and really think it through. And like, was that really the path I needed to be on? Was that really what was going to work out for me? So yeah, feel bad and use that feeling bad to spur some changes and to fuel yourself to work harder. But don't feel bad in this like cosmic lifelong sense. Like, well, it's all fucked now. What the fuck does anything mean? Like, it's temporary. It's just now. And the future is going to be a lot different and maybe a lot better. So I was listening to that and I was like, fuck yeah, that is awesome. I love hearing stuff like that. I love those types of stories. It was just like inspiring. And then I took my headphones out. I took my shirt off to take a shower, and I don't know, I guess last time I took a shower, I just whatever, took a shower. I wasn't really paying attention. This time I took off my shirt right in front of the mirror, and I saw that all my muscles are still there. You know? Everything didn't reset to zero. I guess it's almost like maybe I had this sense that like I'm just supposed to be a skinny nerd. That's what I've always been and that's what I'll always be. This was some weird anomaly that I started getting in shape, but I guess I just expect it to not stay. You know, it's like, oh, well, I took my eye off the prize for a second. I wavered in the slightest. So now I'm just back to normal, back to the old stuff. Oh, well, buh. But that didn't happen. That's not true at all. I took off my shirt, and like I said, because I'm so skinny, all my muscles are really evident. And I look like a pro wrestler, kind of. Like if you make a wrestler, if you create a wrestler in one of the video games and you just take the, like, thickness slider and slide it all the way to skinny, that's what I look like. Like, I'm really skinny, but I have all the same muscles they have, all the same muscle groups. You can see the definition of all the parts. So yeah, those two things together, the 1-2 punch of, like, how positive failing can be, and then seeing that all this work I've been putting into exercise didn't go anywhere. It's still there. I'm still happening. This new version of me is still there. It was very awesome. Made me feel very good. Because really how I feel, problem is, like, identifying these feelings, like, doesn't necessarily help me get from one to the other. But the way it feels like when I get bogged down in the past and stuck in how things that didn't work out and things that I wish had gone different, I always feel like that when the world feels small, like when my life feels small and closed in. And I can't just tell myself to stop feeling like that, you know, like I need to do other things to stop feeling like that. I need to exercise, I need to go work on things, I need to meet new people, I need to go accomplish stuff to open things up. But then when I feel good about stuff and when I don't get hung up on the past is when the world feels open and big. And it just seems like I just got to decide where I want to go and what I want to do, and I can go do it. And those are the times when I feel the best and I just feel excellent. Where when things feel closed off and I feel like I'm not particularly capable and I don't see a clear path of where I'm going, that's, I guess, when I fall back on, like, people that I already know and things that already happened. Or like in the case of this girl, I mean, it almost worked, you know? It almost worked. Like, we were talking about apartments we would have together, and I hope we can have a balcony and all this fucking shit. So when it feels like the world's closing in on me, and like when life seems like this small little contained ball that I, like, it's like I can only pick from what's around me and what's happened before and what I'm familiar with and what I know about. So, I mean, I think that's why my mind fixates on that situation. It's like, well, shit, when that was good, that was the greatest. Like, that was like your weird love junkie addictive personality was getting fed hardcore by the validation you got from this girl. So I get stuck on that. But when I'm feeling more on top of things, then it's like, yeah, well, that was a, that happened, and there was good stuff and there was bad stuff, nice memories, bad memories, but I can just, I can move on, I can just meet other people, I can do other stuff. So none of these things work as some kind of magic bullet, you know, like if I'm feeling fucking crappy, I can't just think like, oh, well, hey, what if I'm just inventing a scenario to get frustrated about like those kids did? Or I can't just say, hey, remember this example of a guy who had problems and then it led to better stuff later. Like, I guess it's good to have all these multitudes of ways of looking at it and all these different coping mechanisms, because maybe one of them will work, you know? I gotta just kind of spend some time looking at them all and trying different stuff, and then maybe one of them will work. But again, I do think just the most useful one, the one I can lean on the most, is just exercise. Just the way that I feel better after I exercise, like, just feel like a different type of creature once my blood's pumping and my heart's going and my muscles are sore from being used. And just the visual aspect, man, God, that goes a long way. I can kind of see how, like, women get caught in anorexia and stuff, because you must feel like you're doing the right thing, you know? Because seeing a visible physical change in yourself, like, that is powerful. That's very hard to deny. It's like I can think about how things seem to be going better, or how things are going to be different, or how things are changing in my mind. But I don't necessarily have to rely on myself buying into it. I don't have to wait for other people to validate it. I can see it. Look at that right there. Look how different that is.
but not me.
I do think, though, I really do think that things are changing in my mind in a way that I'm surprised about. Like, I remember in one of Elliot Hulse's videos, he talked about, I'll try to give the short version, it's basically just that, you know, entropy is the tendency of everything in the universe to grind down to nothingness. But obviously that doesn't happen for some systems, like human beings. We don't grind down. We keep growing and producing, and things just go further and further and further. And how is that? And it's because there are certain types of organisms that when they get overloaded with information, or they get overloaded with data or just stimulus that they can't process anymore, they spontaneously rearrange how they function. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And when it does work, then that new form is what carries on. And that's how organisms become more and more complex rather than grinding down. And that absolutely happens with humans when there's just too much to handle, just too much to survive, you know? You just are in a situation where you just can't deal with the stimulus that's coming in anymore. I guess some people do just shut off and shut down and just lay down and die. But that's not always what happens. That's not even what usually happens. Instead, our preconceptions change. Our way of looking at life changes. Our values change, our goals change, our way of seeing the world and our way of behaving changes until we can accept this new level of stimulus that we couldn't handle before. And maybe it changes how you are, because it changes what outputs from you. Like, I think sometimes when I see just, like, old tough guys who just barely ever talk, maybe they were born that way, maybe that's just the way they were ever since they were babies, but I think more than likely the world kind of pushed them to be that way. Life was hard long enough in a specific way that they couldn't deal with, so it changed how they are. It changed how they react to things, changed how they interact with people, just changed their being. But I think it can change the other way also. I mean, people that are really open and really light and really accepting of the world. Again, maybe that's just how they were born, and maybe that's how they always have been. But more than likely, it was events in their lives and the way things were that led them to be that way. And I really feel like even though all this was some weird breakup, I mean, it's kind of objectively not that big a deal, but subjectively it is. Like, to me, just coming from where I was coming from, of this just soft life, not having a job for ages, just pursuing my own stuff, not having a lot of rules or regulations I had to follow, not being particularly involved in society. Soft, you know? So a thing like this was very painful for me, very, very hard. Whereas somebody that's gone through, you know, 24 breakups, it wouldn't be that big a deal. But it's been too long, and I'm just too unprepared and too unready, too inexperienced. So it was brutal. It was super hard. But the way that these changes have been happening, like, feel real. And the one that still surprises me the most, because if there was ever one that I thought would be a temporary one, it's this, is how I realized how much of this whole situation came from my view of male and female relationships being really skewed and weird, and of not really thinking of women as equal beings, you know, or having all these other hang-ups associated with that. Because once I realized that and really was just set in my mind that this needs to change because it's ruining my whole life and making me miserable and is not what I want. The only way I'm going to be happy, just with myself or with a partner, is to not view women in this possessive way, like they're some fucking piece of toast that I just should be mine. I mean, that's a weird analogy, but it really stuck, because then from there, the way I can tell the easiest is porn. Is it just seems so clear if porn is coming from a good place or a bad place. Like, is it coming from a situation where the woman is involved and excited and engaged and turned on? Or is it coming from a place of just guys just using women like they're a toy? And rather than just, like, delete my whole porn folder or just do some severe thing, instead I've been kind of going through it and just like, all right, what is this? And that, like, that weird little possessive golem voice in my fucking back of my head, oh, my precious, whatever. Like, if I have some weird, creepy porn, I'll kind of flip through it a little, and there might be, like, a little twinge from my dick from just literal decades of training myself and watching that stuff, but I don't feel any need to hang on to it, and I'm just like, what is this? What was I even thinking? Like, what in the fuck? What does this have to do with sex? What does this have to do with a relationship between a man and a woman? It's just purely masturbatory, and even in that sense, like, what is this? Why would I want to have these feelings while I jerk off? Why would I want to associate this, like, weird power trip with something that doesn't need to feel that way? It can just feel like, ah, oh, geez, just the... I guess that's, like, the bigger appeal, is this... realizing I don't have to feel weird about porn. I don't have to feel weird about jerking off. Like, I can just feel good about it and about myself, and just feel fine about expressing sexuality and just being proud of that. I just, like, man, I don't know, just not having any sense, any feeling that there's something shameful about sex, you know? I really think that, like, power trip porn, which is really mostly just a whole porn, you know, it gets real bad, but even just the normal stuff is just, like, you can tell, it's so, even that, like, it's just rote, and it's just, like, so, like, it's just boring and weird, and it's like, what is this? And I don't know, I just kind of expected, I guess, like, that this wave was gonna crash, and I would just revert back to my old ways, and I just don't, I just haven't. Or I guess I expected, like, I would have to be so careful and, like, keep all this stuff at arm's length and treat myself like some kind of junkie. Like, I just can't have this. I just can't have this weird porn around, and I can't look at it, and I can't think about it. Like, I'm gonna fall off the wagon. And that's not happening at all. Like, I just really have understood that it was just bad for me, and that it didn't make me feel good about myself, and that feeling pride in myself, feeling proud of myself, is so much more valuable, so much more important than any kind of weird little thrill that I would get from seeing some chick get cummed and spit on or whatever. Yeah, like maybe people don't wildly change, you know? Somebody who met me last year, who meets me now, is not going to think anything's any different. I'm just Keith McNally. But things have changed. There are differences. And I guess because I'm the one who spends all goddamn day with myself, I'm the one who's most aware of them. But they're important and they're evident. They're like tangible. And it's pretty amazing. Like, I don't know, I thought it would be more of a fight with my brain. This other stuff is, you know? Just the relationship romance side of my brain that just grasps on to the tattered remains of nothing like a super junkie. That's very hard to fight. That one has given me a lot of trouble. But the porn side, I still can't believe it. I'm just, like, amazed by it. Like, I guess it makes sense. It's like, you know, it like, hijacked this great thing that you can just feel good by fucking jerking off. And it got, like, hijacked by the fact that I was just always jerking off to this weird, mean, aggressive crap. Maybe it's, like, surprising it took this long for me to clue in. But I don't know, that's a good feeling of just like, I just feel so secure in it. Even just as I was just walking along, these two girls just walked by and were talking, and one of them in particular was just like, I was just like, oh, that's the kind of girl I just can tell, like, I kind of would like. Kind of nerdy girl with glasses. Just from her walking by, I just had this sense of like, yeah, I bet we could hang out, I bet we could get along. And I just feel like I could do that now. Like, I really feel like all this weird little, just, you know, it seems so like, well, no one can know what's going on in my head. I'm just all by myself jerking off. No one needs to know what kind of weird porn I'm fucking watching or what's going through my head. But you do carry it with you. You carry it out into the world. And just in all these little ways, it just makes you, or it made me insecure and just like uncomfortable with myself and uncomfortable with talking to girls. And man, just like that, I guess that's it. Like, just having that feeling is so awesome. The idea that I can just talk to a woman and just talk to them and it's just fine and everything is just cool is so much more clearly valuable and just such a greater, more powerful way to be. But yeah, now when I look at this weird fucked up porn, I'm just like, delete. Like, what is this? What the fuck? Feels good, man. Anyway, that's a goddamn lot of rambling. Holy fuck. To finish things off then, here's a little tune. So Elliott Smith's old band was called Heat Miser. Their first two albums were pretty bad, but their third one, Mike City Sons, was real good. And when they split up, the other head guy in Heat Miser, his name is Neil Gust. He started a band called Number Two. And I wish I had these albums. Since I don't have an iTunes account, like, I don't know how else to even get these things. But I would love to hear them, because the little bit I've heard is fucking good. So here's a song by Number Two called Pop in A. Thanks for listening to all that. All right. I'll talk to you next time. I got never-ending rambling to ramble. See you later.
it's 8 in the morning, and I went to bed at about 3:30, so I haven't slept a ton. But I just woke up from a dream about that girl, and man, that hasn't happened in quite a long time. And I guess one difference that this... Man, I've been laying here for 10 minutes before this finally occurred to me, but in the dream, she was with her boyfriend, and that never used to happen. So that is different. In my brain, she's split off. She's with him. Like, that was the whole thrust of the dream. But still, oh my god, man, it feels so fucked up. Like... I guess, like, I woke up kind of, like, scared feeling, because it's just like, dude, man, when you dream about somebody like that, it's just like they've, like, possessed your mind. It's just so all-encompassing and so overwhelming. It's fucking crazy. And I was just thinking about how, I mean, what set all this in motion was, like, I would dream about her all the time, like almost every day for a while. And what was also different, I guess, is I didn't realize how weird and like strange and like unhealthy this is. I just thought this is what it's like when you like somebody. You just feel this obsessed. I thought it was a nice thing. So I guess I just kind of thought, like, this is the mania. This is how it is to be in love with somebody. So rather than questioning it at all or trying to deny it or fight against it, I just thought, like, oh, there it is. I haven't felt like that in a while, but now I feel like that about this person, so now I have to go make this happen. I didn't really question it. I just went with it. I guess I, like, fought against it some. I remember I would try to find, like, pictures, like, unflattering pictures and stuff on her Facebook and just look at them and just be like, don't feel like this. Don't do it. But it didn't work. I guess I just forgot, like, how all-encompassing it feels. Like, it really does feel like... I guess there is this push and pull with biology, and like there's always the ebb and flow, the wax and the wane, the sturm and drang, whatever. But I forgot, man. I don't know. It is just like, I don't know. I guess I can see it much more clearly now for like this weird, like it's almost like a mental sickness. But it just feels so overwhelming. It's just like, fuck, like... I guess what this means is that I should be, like, thankful that she just is ignoring me and that it's just... I'm just cut off from her. Because this just makes me want to talk to her so fucking bad, man. I just want to feed this little chunky brain, just feed this addiction. But I guess even by the time I started recording this, I was starting to feel better. Like, that realization that she was with someone else, even in my dream, like, that's got to be a good sign. My brain is not kidding itself about that. But man, dreams, they just feel so powerful and just so... Oh, man. Oh, I hope that doesn't happen anymore. What a weird feeling. All right, that's it. See you later. I need like a sign-off phrase, like, hey, let's all try to be less crazy in the future. I don't know, this makes me think, I guess, what I said earlier about realizing that I think I really do need, like, a girlfriend to feel, like, complete or happy in life. But this makes me think, like, I'm really not ready. I do not want to feel like this for someone, like, just this crazy, like, it, I don't know why, but the image that comes back to me is always, like, if inside my body there's, like, spore clouds, like, spore pods that just grow and grow and grow, and then, the pod explodes, and I just get filled with these obsession, crazy love spores. And I just, this is not, it's not how I want to feel about somebody. It just leads to so much possessiveness and jealousy and just weird fucked up shit. And like, yeah, I think I got a ways to go as far as making the environment of my brain like a stable enough place for this not to happen. Oh, all right, so long.
Contently, she leaves the
You know, it seems like crazy to have to tell myself something this seemingly obvious, but like it really does help for me to think. Like once I realize that there's like this kind of like misogyny inherent in the way I was feeling about this girl. Or I wonder if misogyny is even the right word, because like obviously it is about a woman in my case, but only because I'm a man. Like I feel like this is still an applicable phenomenon if you're a woman who is obsessed with a guy. But to think like this girl is my equal, she is a fully, like she is a full human being and she has her own life, and it's not fair to think of her as an accessory to my life, you know? Like I really thought like having this obsession for someone was like a good thing. Like I barely tried to resist it, because I thought the idea of putting someone on a pedestal like that was a good thing. Like they used to say in those old Ayn Rand books I read when I was a teenager, like choosing someone as your ultimate value, and that it's an expression of your respect for them, that you put them in such high regard. And I really think I've come to see it the exact opposite way, that you're just, at least in my case, like just not seeing these people like real people, instead seeing them as a conduit to this feeling of being attached to someone and being obsessed with someone and wanting someone to fill this void in your life. So I've just gotta, like, I think that really does help to just say to myself, like this person is my equal. They're not beneath me, they're not above me. They're just another person on the earth, and they're just as important as I am and as every other person on the earth. And you know, just let them be to live their own life. Oh, like I'm really glad that I'm realizing these things, but Jesus, that I even had to. How did I get here, you know? I'm in my mid-30s, and I feel like I'm 16 years old. Like, I feel like I'm nowhere. Like, I figured out nothing. But at least I'm figuring it out now. I guess that's what's important.
If you weren't such an asshole, maybe I'd be more inclined to call. And we could talk about the old days, you know, the good days before it all went to shit. But things tend to, I mean, it's no one's fault unless it is. If it is, it's probably yours. And if you weren't such an asshole, maybe it would have turned out some other way. And we wouldn't have just squandered all our potential back in the day. But the days got short and times got tough. Well, that's not your fault, so it's probably mine. If you weren't such an asshole, where would we be now? See, I keep on moving forward like a sucker, and I'm sick of how we all grow up, and we all grow old. And we pump out kids or we turn out gay, and we move back home and we move back away, and we all get hurt and we all gotta die, and we've all gotta share history. But I'm gonna kick this downward trend. I've got enough friends.
All right, I want to record one more thing. I was listening to the guy, Yahya Bakar, that I've mentioned before. He's a YouTube guy. He's kind of like a little junior Elliot Hulse. I haven't found nearly as many things from Yahya as I did from Elliot, but he's still got some good videos here and again. And the one he just put up, it's about a text message that his brother sent him. And there was one line from it that really struck me, where his brother told him that you're living the life that someone else is dreaming about. Not about him in particular, but for all of us, for everybody in the first world, and just how easy we have it, you know? Even when you have it tough, it's relatively easy. And yeah, that image really struck me. Just, you're living the life that someone else is dreaming about. Like, someone else on the earth right now is just wishing they could have this life that we have. Like, they're wishing so much that they had the opportunities we have, and the ease that we have, and the just the openness of the life that we have. So I have all these cue cards that I bought to do my introduction earlier in the month. And I'm never going to use them. I didn't even use them then. Like, I wrote things down on the cue cards to memorize them, but then I didn't use cue cards in the end. So I saw these cards, and it's just, you know, I know they'll just sit here until I move somewhere else, and then, you know, I don't know what'll happen to them. So I wrote down, I took a pen and I wrote down on one of the cue cards, you are living the life that someone else is dreaming about. And I figured I would just put it somewhere where I would find it. But I also noticed that just looking at it, it doesn't strike me the same way it does when I write it. To sit down and write that phrase, you really spend a moment really thinking about it, you know, you really focus on that notion of being appreciative of what you have and of not focusing on perceived negatives, you know, and just not getting yourself bogged down. And like, because really there's no greater waste than that. It's one thing to have this life that we all have, but to just not appreciate it and not be mindful of that. I mean, and then you might as well not have it, you know? So what I'm going to do, I don't know how many cue cards are here, a bunch, is every day I'm gonna rewrite that phrase. Just pick a new cue card and write down, you are living the life that someone else is dreaming about, until I write it on every single one of these cue cards. I don't know, I'm guessing it'll take about 3 or 4 months. And I think at that point, like, I will have internalized that idea. Yeah, I don't know, it's kind of a neat thing, but we'll see. We'll see how this works. I mean, that happens sometimes where I'll hear something that kind of strikes me, or some kind of phrase that's really cool, and then it it's inspirational for the moment, but it doesn't last. But I feel like this one is a really good one. I mean, that just encompasses everything, you know. It just makes it so clear that whatever I'm getting hung up about is not something I should be hung up about. And I should just appreciate everything that's around me. And like I learned from Elliot Hulse, like, one of his sayings is, do the thing and you will have the power. You know, don't talk about it, don't spend all your time thinking about it, do it. Just go do the thing, and then you have that power that you know, that you've improved your life, you've built something, you've done it. And I'm going to try to apply that idea to just a concept, you know, a saying. If I write this down every morning until all these cue cards are filled, maybe I will have that in my mind then. It will just be there. It will stay there, and I won't forget it, you know. It'll be easy to remember, easy to summon, to call up. Alright, and for a song, I already played this before, but I'm gonna play it again. It's Yellow Flicker Beat, the new Lord song. And I just listened to it while I was doing push-ups, and I love it, it's such a good song. So, here's Yellow Flicker Beat by Lord.
I'm a princess cut from marble, smoother than a storm. And the scars that mark my body, they're silver and gold. My blood is a flood, the ruby's precious stones. It keeps my veins hot, the fire's found a home in me. I move through town, I'm quiet like a fire. My necklace is a rope, I tie it and untie. And now people talk to me, but nothing ever hits home. People talk to me and all the voices just burn home.